Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Republican candidates debate in California. Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump took center stage Wednesday at his party's second major debate of the nomination race. 10 challengers joined the real estate tycoon at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon denounced Hungary's treatment of migrants Wednesday after police fired tear gas and sprayed water cannon at hundreds of asylum seekers on the country's border with Serbia. Serbian Prime Minister Aleksandar Vučić condemned what he said was Hungary's brutal treatment of the migrants fleeing Syria and other Middle East countries. Croatia's Prime Minister Zoran Milanovic also criticized Hungary's action, saying his country is prepared for the influx of migrants. The UN Security Council is unanimously demanding the immediate release of the president, prime minister, and other officials being held hostage in Burkina Faso by renegade members of the presidential guard Wednesday, detained the officials, and are said to be holding them hostage. Reports say the renegades are supporters of ousted President Blaise Compaoré. It's unclear if there have been any casualties, and the soldiers have not made any demands. Authorities in Chile ordered residents to evacuate the coast Wednesday after an 8.3 magnitude earthquake and two strong aftershocks prompted a tsunami warning. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center says hazardous waves more than 3 meters above normal tides are possible for the entire Chilean coast. Higher than normal waves are also possible as far south as Antarctica and as far west as Malaysia. No damage or injuries reported in Chile. This is VOA News. A United Nations investigation finds that both Sri Lankan government forces and rebel Tamil Tigers committed war crimes and crimes against humanity during the country's lengthy civil war. The UN Human Rights Office recommends a special court with international judges be set up to prosecute the crimes. Lisa Schlein reports.
The report documents years of denials and cover-ups and a failure to carry out prompt investigations. It says there must be a reckoning with the past and that impunity for these crimes must end. But he notes Sri Lanka's criminal justice system is flawed and unable to undertake this task. He says Sri Lanka risks slipping back into conflict without looking at its past. Zaid says the report recommends the establishment of a hybrid special court integrating international judges, prosecutors, lawyers, and investigators. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Ukraine intends to pursue its campaign to strip Russia of its UN Security Council veto power when the United Nations General Assembly opens its annual meeting later this month. Ukraine's parliament voted unanimously Wednesday in favor of an international initiative to prevent the use of the veto to block Security Council resolutions or actions in cases where conflict becomes, quoting now, especially rigid. Ukrainian officials said they envision phasing in gradually any restrictions on the use of the veto power in the Security Council. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States is considering Russia's offer of military-to-military talks on the war in Syria. Kerry held talks this week by telephone with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Kerry said Wednesday he wants a complete and clear understanding of what Russia's intentions are. He also said he warned Lavrov about Russia's increased involvement in Syria. The top U.S. commander in the Middle East told a congressional panel that only 4 or 5 Syrian rebels trained by the United States remain in the fight against the Islamic State group. General Lloyd Austin said many of the first 54 graduates of a special training program came under attack in Syria. In testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee, the general conceded the program has gotten off to a slow start, and he said the U.S. will not reach its original goal of training more than 5,000 Syrians. Top officials of the U.S. Central Bank are preparing to decide if they will raise interest rates for the first time in a decade. Analysts say it is hard to predict what the U.S. Federal Reserve will do or what impact its actions will have. The decision is expected on Thursday. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Thursday, September 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There was sporadic gunfire throughout the night in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou.
The situation in Burkina Faso is very confused. They interrupt the meeting of the government, and they have the president of Burkina Faso, Michel Kafando, and the prime minister and some member of the government.
Etienne Minougou is director of the International Festival Theatre in Ouagadougou. Torrential rains caused extensive flooding in Sierra Leone. Amnesty International accuses Boko Haram and Cameroonian security of alleged abuses. And South Africa faces a constitutional crisis if Sudan's President Bashir visits the country in December.
We think that it is a triumph for the rule of law in South Africa, and we are very pleased that the courts have taken a principled decision on this matter.
Jay himself is federal executive chairperson for South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance. The correct version of President Mugabe's speech has finally been presented to Parliament, and a new report hails a drop in malaria deaths. Those stories plus Marco Woman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There was sporadic gunfire last night in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, after soldiers Wednesday arrested the country's transitional president and prime minister, raising fears of a coup just weeks before the country holds an election on October 11 to replace longtime leader Blaise Compaoré, who was ousted in a popular uprising late last year. There was no immediate claim by the military on public airwaves that they were in control of the country. Etienne Minougou, director of the International Festival of Theater in Burkina Faso's capital, says one possible cause of the uprising could be a decision by the country's interim administration to bar members of former President Compaoré's party from participating in next month's election.
The situation in Burkina Faso is very confused. In the middle of the afternoon, there's a member military of the RFC, who call RFC, Régiment de Sécurité Présidentielle. They interrupt the meeting of the government, and they have the president of Burkina Faso, Michel Kafando, and the prime minister and some member of the government. And then the people going outside could tell that they are not very agree with this situation. And we hear guns, shooting guns, and some of radio, television has interrupted. So the situation is very confused. Nobody knows what the problem, but everybody thinks that it is about the election, but also the question of the place of this regime of the presidential between institutions of Burkina Faso.
Did the military people who are trying to stage what I would call a coup d'etat, did they say why they are doing it?
Nobody knows if it's a coup d'etat because we don't know have information about it. But we know that the situation is confused, and we are waiting for news. But Radio Omega, one of the most important radio in Ouagadougou, is interrupted. The national television and radio interrupt. So it's on Facebook and Twitter and all this new technology of communication that people share the information.
You mentioned that maybe this has to do with the election. Can you tell us why it might be about the election?
You know that some important decision politically has adopted by the Conseil National de la Transition. This is our big institution of democracy in the parliament. And they noted that the member of the government of Blaise Compaoré, they cannot go to the election. And also yesterday, there's a report of Conseil National de la Réconciliation et de la Réforme. And this report suggests that the régime de sécurité présidentielle will be changed, and that the gendarmerie and police will take care of the president of the Burkina Faso. So maybe all that decision make them fear about the future.
We know that the protests that led to the removal of Blaise Compaoré was led by some civil society groups. What are they saying about this latest situation in Burkina Faso?
I'm hearing now the gun shooting.
You say you are hearing gunfire. Where? In the city?
Yes. in the city, near the Palais Presidentiel. You hear?
I hear the gunfire.
Okay, so I think it's better for me to stop now.
Okay, Etienne, thank you very much again. Please be safe.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless Burkina Faso.
Etienne Minungu is director of the International Festival Theater. He was speaking with me from the Burkina Faso capital, Ouagadougou. Torrential rains in Sierra Leone have caused heavy flooding and extensive damage to homes and property in the capital, Freetown. Telephone communication has been disrupted. The government has asked all citizens to stay at home today, Thursday, except for essential workers and students who are taking the West Africa examination. On the line to Freetown is VOA reporter Kelvin Lewis. Good morning to you, Kelvin.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much again, Kelvin, for joining us from a very flooded Freetown. How bad is the flooding situation in your country's capital?
James, it's very, very bad. I have not seen this in all my life, and I've lived in this town for all my life, and I'm not a young man anymore. It's so bad that cars have been moved, houses have been wiped away, and in some cases, people have had to access the roof to get out of flooding houses. Whole areas have been flooded, and it's so massive. It's so massive. Everywhere in the city, there are places where lots and lots of people have been displaced.
Kelvin, has there been any fatality?
Yes, James. The government has confirmed that 4 people have died, but other sources are telling me that there are 7 people, and it is likely that more could have died.
I'm sure Sierra Leone has had flooding in the past before, but tell me, Kelvin, how did this particular one, how did this flooding come to that?
Well, I think the devastation to homes has been caused by human error because people have been building houses in places where they're not supposed to build houses. They've been closing up the waterways. And, of course, the water, when it comes in high quantities like it has been doing in the past days, it's obviously going to try to find a way to pass through. And so it has been clearing those houses which are in its path. But I would say the meteorologist says that West Africa is going to be swamped with monsoon rains.
What has been the Sierra Leone government's response to this flooding so far?
Well, the government issued a press release, and in the press release it said that the president had convened an emergency meeting with the security forces and disaster preparedness section in the Office of National Security. And he has already ordered the military and the police out into the streets to be able to help people. They've opened up 2 stadia, the main Shaka Stevens stadia and the smaller stadia in the east end of the country. The government has also asked everybody to stay at home tomorrow, except some kids who are taking their exams.
Kelvin Lewis, thank you very much again for talking with us from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Thank you very much, Jim.
That was VOA reporter Kelvin Lewis speaking with us from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. Amnesty International has condemned alleged abuses by Boko Haram and Cameroonian security forces in a report released on Wednesday. The Nigerian militant sect stepped up its attacks in northern Cameroon last year, prompting the Cameroonian troops to join a regional offensive. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé. Amnesty International's researcher for Central Africa, Ilaria Aligrozi, says both Boko Haram insurgents and Cameroonian soldiers fighting terrorism have caused great suffering.
We talk about killings, we talk about kidnappings, we talk about destruction, widespread destruction of public and private properties.
Amnesty says Boko Haram has killed nearly 380 people in northern Cameroon since mid-2014. Militants have also burned hundreds of homes. Aligrozi says although security forces have played a very important role protecting civilians, they are at the same time also committing abuses.
There's killings, destruction of properties, arbitrary arrests, and also inhuman prison conditions, especially in Maroua, where you have a population of some 1,300 prisoners. Half of them are Boko Haram suspected, and they live in very difficult conditions. The prison is overcrowded, there's lack of hygiene and lack of health care. Some of the prisoners are even held in chains till today.
Amnesty says 130 men and boys have disappeared at the hands of Cameroonian soldiers and 25 have died in custody. The rights group is calling for international investigations. Cameroon's government spokesman declined to comment on the report Wednesday, saying authorities are preparing their response. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte, Washington. Today is Thursday, September 17th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. A prominent member of South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance says the country faces a constitutional crisis if President Jacob Zuma keeps his word to officially invite Sudan's President Omar Hassan al-Bashir to visit the country in December. His comments came on Wednesday after a court rejected a government appeal of a ruling that said the administration was wrong in allowing the Sudanese president to leave the country following an African Union summit in June. James Self, Federal Executive Chairperson of the Democratic Alliance, tells reporter Peter Clotty that it appears President Zuma is on a collision course with the country's courts.
We think that it is a triumph for the rule of law in South Africa, and we are very pleased that the courts have taken a principled decision on this matter, because at the time we were outraged by the fact that President al-Bashir was invited to South Africa, arrived here in clear contravention of our obligations under the Rome Statute. But what was worse than that is that a court of law issued an order prohibiting President al-Bashir from leaving the country, and not only did the government deliberately ignore it, but they actually and actively helped President al-Bashir leave the country. They provided a police escort for him to travel to a military base from which he was able to leave to go back to Sudan.
Now, but President Jacob Zuma last month defended the government treatment of Bashir, saying that Bashir had immunity as a guest of the African Union.
Yes, well, that was an argument that the court rejected and has rejected again, because they argued that he had diplomatic immunity. The courts found that the diplomatic immunity did not negate our obligations under the Rome Statute, and more particularly our obligations under the implementation of the Rome Statute Act, which the South African Parliament passed in 2002. So I don't think that that particular argument holds any water, and the courts happen to agree with that.
With this ruling, what's next for the Democratic Alliance in your quest to ensure the rule of law is upheld in South Africa?
Well, this is an interesting case. It shows that the courts are prepared to engage in difficult public policy issues and to take on the executive. We have a further 15 major cases on in South African courts at the moment, most of them involving challenges to the president or the executive, including a court case which has now gone on for maybe 6 years, remedial action that was ordered by the public protector in South Africa against the South African Broadcasting Corporation and its chief operating officer, Mr. Claudio Motsoeneng. So we are engaging in litigation to try to establish clearer guidelines in our still very young constitutional democracy so that the right rules and the right parameters are established to allow the three arms of government to operate more harmoniously together.
James Self is South Africa's Opposition Democratic Alliance Federal Executive Chairperson. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Johannesburg. Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa yesterday officially presented to a special sitting of parliament the corrected speech which President Robert Mugabe was supposed to read at the official opening of the third session of the 8th parliament on Tuesday. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
I put the question that the text of the speech presented by His Excellency the President, Comrade Arajim Mugabe, at the official opening of the third session of the 8th Parliament be withdrawn and substituted by the correct version, and that the incorrect text be expunged from the records of Parliament.
That is the Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mdenda, after Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa had tabled the correct speech which President Mugabe was supposed to deliver yesterday. The tabling took place after 2 hours of intense debate, during which most members of parliament from both sides of the aisle condemned the mix-up which led President Mugabe to deliver a wrong speech. Some opposition lawmakers said it was a grave mistake for Mr. Mugabe to end up reading the wrong speech, stressing that it ridiculed the 91-year-old Zimbabwean leader who has ruled the country for more than 35 years. They called for an investigation into the incident and urged the governments to punish the people who are in charge of presidential speeches. Among those who called for the investigation from the opposition were Nelson Chamisa, Thokozani Khupe, Prince Svanda, Priscilla Mushonga, and Abednego Bebe. From the ruling party, only Munyaradzi Kereke was clear that what happened yesterday was unacceptable. Chamisa added that those people who issued the wrong speech must be fired.
What it does, Mr. Speaker, is that it positions our president in an invidious position. But not only is it about the president, it is about our country. And this is what we are supposed to go to the bottom of. What is it that caused, what accounted for this mishap?
MDCT Vice President Khupe demanded an apology from Vice President and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, saying the executive embarrassed the president.
Mr. Speaker, say what I expected from the Vice President was for him to apologize to this House and indeed to the nation.
According to the correct speech which was published by the state-controlled Herald newspaper, some of the bills that will be considered in the current session are the Public Health, Zimbabwe Standards Regulatory Authority, State Procurement, and the General Laws Amendment Bills. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A new report finds that the number of global malaria deaths and cases has plunged to an all-time low since 2000, when the Millennium Development Goals were established. The report finds malaria deaths have dropped by 60% and cases by 37%, thereby halting and reversing the devastation caused by the ancient killer. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report by the World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund calls the sharp drop in malaria deaths and cases an unprecedented success, citing new tools developed over the past 15 years. These include new, easy-to-use diagnostics, artemisinin-based combination therapies, and long-lasting insecticide-treated mosquito nets. The new technologies have saved the lives of 6.2 million people since 2000, the majority under age 5, according to UNICEF senior health specialist Mark Young. He says a significant increase in the use of insecticide-treated bed nets has played a major role.
But it's also important to point out that malaria still remains a disease of poverty, and that millions of children in sub-Saharan Africa, mostly from the poorest households in remote rural areas, still do not have access to insecticide-treated nets or effective treatment. And reaching them will be critical if we want to achieve equitable and sustainable development.
The report calls sub-Saharan Africa the most seriously affected region, accounting for 89% of all malaria cases and more than 90% of deaths, most among children under 5. WHO and UNICEF say progress toward eliminating malaria is being made in an increasing number of countries, noting the fastest decreases were in the Caucasus, Central and Eastern Asia. The UN agencies aim to reduce global malaria deaths and cases by 90% by 2030, but say nearly $9 billion will be needed to achieve this sustainable development goal over the next 15 years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. Kenyan Alice Aprot clocked 31 minutes and 24.18 seconds to set a championship record in women's 10,000 meters on Wednesday. The previous mark stood at 31 minutes and 26.05 seconds by Ethiopian Mestawet Tufa in Algiers, Algeria in 2007. For the second day running, Nigerian women bagged three gold medals in athletics. Claire Uke, Chinazom Amadi, and Uhunoma Osazua triumphed in women's discus, long jump, and heptathlon, respectively. Meanwhile, Abdelmalek Lahlulu triumphed in men's 400-meter hurdles and for the third time this year set an Algerian national record of 48.67 seconds. Egyptian Mustafa El Gamal clinched the gold medal in men's hammer throw. Algerian Hicham Khalid Cherabi triumphed in pole vault. Botswana's Nigel Amos was victorious in men's 800 meters, and Ivory Coast won the men's 4x100-meter relay. In basketball, Egypt pipped Nigeria 61-60, and Angola beat Mali 76-62 in men's semifinals on Wednesday. Mozambique outwitted Republic of Congo 79-68 in a classification tie. In women's classification matches, Mozambique dismissed Ivory Coast 90-56, as Cameroon outwitted Gabon 54-46. In handball, Nigeria edged Ivory Coast 25-20 in women's quarterfinals on Wednesday. Cameroon outplayed Burkina Faso 41-19. Senegal dismissed Republic of Congo 24-16. And Angola dismissed the Democratic Republic of Congo 29-22. In Olympic news, the cities of Budapest in Hungary, Hamburg in Germany, Los Angeles in the United States of America, the French capital Paris, and the Italian capital Rome are bidding to stage the 2024 Olympics. The International Olympic Committee, IOC President Thomas Bach, disclosed in Lausanne, Switzerland on Wednesday. The IOC will contribute $1.7 billion in cash and services to the organizing committee for those games. Finally, the International Olympic Committee has set up a $2 million fund for programs aimed at alleviating the growing global refugee crisis. The crisis is particularly acute in parts of Africa, Middle East, and Southern Europe. IOC President Thomas Bach says the Olympic movement seeks to play a part in bringing humanitarian help to refugees. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, September 17th.
Hello, Daybreak Africa. Good morning. This is Amos Stewart and Free Town. I just want to say, this is the Tuesday, 16th of September. There was a heavy downpour of rain in Free Town that led to a lot of people being displaced due to the heavy downpour. Normally in September, we don't used to have this kind of heavy downpour. I think it's the climate change and the global warming telling on us.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN Security Council has unanimously demanded the immediate release of the president, prime minister, and others being held hostage in Burkina Faso by renegade members of the presidential guard. The council condemned the detentions in the strongest terms. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he is outraged and calls it a flagrant violation of Burkina Faso's constitution. That is it for this Thursday, September 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Butters saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.